strong show to start the week. A lot of Mayweather-McGregor action.
Yeah, where did it get punchy? That was interesting. A lot of different pubs and clubs and, geez, they came out swinging. Gordy Tallis with some leagues, some shocking behaviour by, well, you'll never guess, Josh Dugan, but that was quite interesting, saying what that leads into before the finals, Marto and Robin.
We also did. How come Kiwis are smart enough to put beer into plastic bottles and we're still throwing them in cans?
Yeah, that is a real deep dive into that. Enjoy. What is the catch-up today?
All the trouble bringing a plastic stubby home from New Zealand.
Marto, Ed and Robin for breakfast. Doing it for Team Moto. They have your Father's Day shopping sorted.
Biggest event yesterday afternoon was the Mayweather-McGregor fight. But I want to talk about at the atmosphere at the pubs. If you went out yesterday, things got a little bit punchy, especially, yes. Well, down at Surface Paradise, we've been mentioning this. This is the reporter on, I don't know if it was Channel 9 or 7 last night.
Sam, has the crowd moved on?
As you can see here at the Surface Paradise Beer Garden, police have set up a major crime scene.
And there was still being a guy questioned over his left shoulder. This was 6 o'clock last night. It was Channel 9, actually. And then they had a few witnesses going, what happened there? Because it was a bit of a bloodbath.
Yeah, it was pretty full on. There was definitely a lot of blood.
To be honest, I just think it's stupid. Everyone's, you know, alcohol-fueled and just think that they can pick a fight.
She's right.
Voice
she's
of pretty, reason.
She's pretty Absolutely right there. Right. But the footage I saw, which I was, I don't know if I should be happy, but I was a guy on a gurney being wheeled away. He was bleeding and he was in handcuffs and he was protesting his innocence to the TV cameras as he was being led away.
Security guards pushed me down for no reason. Yeah. Mace me. What for? Because I'm the victim.
He is the victim.
So security pushed him down. They've maced him. Then he got handcuffs on. Then he got a cut in his head. Next thing you know, he's hopping it. Wouldn't you love to be the Ambo driver on that one?
All the way to the hospital.
I'm the victim.
That sounded like Dave Hughes. Like... Oh, hold on. Just play that again.
I'm the victim.
Dave Hughes sounds like that, doesn't he?
Does he?
Don't you reckon that voice sounds like someone who's been going to the bar all afternoon? Two rum and cokes and two Bundys.
What do you want, Wise?
I'm the victim.
That's the voice you get from that.
If you keep it running, I'm the victim, and then you go, I'm the bogan!
Isn't this just like after Bathurst, people get caught for speeding too much and
they
hugging
do.
Corners?
Yeah.
Isn't this the same thing? Or after Origin, you all get a bit...
Tackling Street, you start tackling blokes.
I'd just like to say it's a boy thing. I don't think that after a great netball tournament, girls start to put their arms up and go...
Contact.
And the other thing that you didn't realise of the glory of yesterday from a female's perspective, at the pub watching the fight, first time ever, no queue for the ladies' toilets.
Oh, they're the days when we go into the ladies' toilets.
Exactly.
One
bloke
just opens. Anyone in there? Yeah. It's all clear, boys. In we go. It's
like, hey, so how did it go where you watched the fight? Did it get a bit aggressive where you watched the fight? Could be, you don't have to name the venue. You can just say a venue in a certain place. Did it get aggressive? Because it does seem as though this is what happens. The UFC,
people start putting
the
their punches up and doing the imitation or dancing on the balls of their feet. Next thing you know, someone goes, settle down, mate. Don't tell me to settle down. Settle down, mate. Say,
I'm the victim.
Danny from Kalanga. Danny, what happened?
Well, we had our under sixes footy breakup party yesterday at one of those super loud, crazy play centres. And there weren't punches thrown, but there were certainly a few dirty looks thrown when all the... hubbies suddenly disappeared and the mums couldn't find them and the kids were whinging and whining.
What happened?
And they were all in the car park watching the game on someone's laptop.
It's brilliant.
Kids.
I love the
kids
world.
And the kids won't forget. They won't remember that, Danny. Out to the
left.
More about the mums, Rob. You're right. Yeah.
Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Daddy.
That's what happens.
Renee of Thornlands. What happened? Did anyone get punchy?
Yeah, we were actually at home watching it on pay-per-view, and our 14-month-old little girl, when she woke up from her sleep right in time for the main event, she started slapping the coffee table, clapping her hands, squealing, and then when her father picked her up to try and get it to calm down, she started hitting him.
Yep. Yeah, she punched Dad, and Dad was heard to shout... That's the victim.
Thanks, Renee.
Hey, Brad, you're from Narangba. Where were you for the fight?
Yeah, we're the Duport Hotel up at Maroochydore, and all the backpackers reserved the table in front of the TV. Must have been a couple of weeks ago, no one was coming on, but there's 20 of them standing there, singing, bouncing on their balls with their toes for the first 2.5 rounds. Olé, 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 olé.
Yeah. Irish? Were they all Irish?
The Irish backpackers. Yeah, they just got quiet real quick.
Yeah, after about round four, because I was at the Crow's Nest pub in Sydney, which is where I am at the moment, and we had a massive contingent of Irishmen, and then round four, it was silent.
Oh, yeah, they all went real quiet.
Is there a happier bunch, though? How good are they? Like, is there a happier bunch of fans than Irish fans for everything? There was a mate of mine was actually at the fight, and he said that without the Irish fans, boxing is quite, the fans of boxing aren't the,
it's fun, you know, though, aren't
the most fun in the world, but they make it fun. The Irish guys made it fun. Thank you. Adam is from the Gold Coast. Oh, Adam, did it. We know it got a little bit punchy on the Gold Coast. What happened, buddy?
Yeah, mate, I was actually at Beer Garden.
Oh, jeez.
You were there.
Yeah, it was heaps of people there, and it was very crowded and whatever. But as soon as it started unleashing, as soon as the fight stopped, you could see it was going to erupt, and I was surprised it didn't erupt actually more than it did. So
what started it though?
What got it going?
Everyone was just full of liquor and bad manners, as to speak. It kicked off all of a sudden, but you could see it was brewing all the way through the fight. There was a bit of crowd there, and people were bumping and pushing outside in the smoking area and also inside as well. So
it does something to men's brains, doesn't it, Adam? When there's that much sort of fight in the air and testosterone, it does something to us, doesn't it? It's not the best environment.
It wasn't just the blokes, though. Even some of the birds out on the smoking area were getting involved in there.
Fighting Darius.
Good Lord. Oh, dear, Adam.
Darius. Phrase, did you see some punchiness, too?
Oh, mate, the pub was packed. I was at Ipswich there, and it was during the fight, and everyone just started going off, and I looked behind me, and the crowd was loving it, It was in the TAB, and it sprawled out into the smoking area and into the car park.
Oh, the TAB.
Was there a fight in the TAB?
Yeah, it was brilliant.
It was brilliant. Fraser loves it. There you go.
Did you hear this bloke, Fraser, at all? Was he there?
I'm the victim!
Did you hear that bloke?
Mate, there's several dudes like that there.
Yeah, that's right. We bet there was a bit of that going on.
Thank you, Fraser.
I woke up early. Robin, you often like listening to Luke Boner on your way in the mornings, early mornings. He's on radio on Triple M from 12 until 5 each night. He was talking to, he does a cross to Channel 7's morning girl, Natalie Barr, I think her name is, on Sunrise.
Newsreader on Sunrise.
Is that what she does, newsreader?
Yes.
Right. Well, she does all the news stories overnight and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Well, she mentioned one thing that happened. She was on Friday. She came up to the Sunshine Coast to do a fundraising function, and they raised lots of money, her and Mark Beretta. Then she started talking about this. Now, Mark Beretta's the sports guy on Sunrise. Is that right?
Yes, that's
all right.
He went water skiing with his mates, broke his kneecap, and tore his quadricep muscle off the bone.
No. Oh, don't. I'm flinching.
All right. Nah. Now, if I remember anything about Mark Beretta, because I once saw him somewhere at some public event and went, who is that? And they said, oh, he's Mark Beretta. I said, well, is he an old footballer or what is he? They said he's a former water skiing champion. Hold on, does anyone find this funny that he goes and water skis? Because she went on to say, we did our function and then he stayed at the Sunshine Coast Friday night and was going water skiing on the Saturday. And next thing you know, she's told that he's just completely stuffed his leg.
This happens, Marta. This is what happens when men in particular try and relive their glory days. A couple of my mates were trying to play over 30s AFL, Robin.
Oh, Masters.
And as I call it, I'm pretty sure that the over 30s AFL competition is organised in secret by knee surgeons in order to drum up business.
Have you had knee injuries? I've had two broken legs from mates of mine. Should have known better.
Dead set.
AFL.
Yeah, but my cousin's husband was a BMX champion right through his teenage years. Gave it up when he was 20.
Oh, why did he give it up, Robin? Why?
Well, got to the world.
Could have been
then
chumpy pulling.
Well, it wasn't Olympic sport when he was doing it.
Yeah,
Didn't get injured at all ever once. As a 40-year-old trying to show his 4-year-old how to BMX, came off the bike, broke both his hips.
Oh.
Both of them.
That is wicked. That's an awful injury.
For like 6 months.
All right, I'll throw another one in. A mate went back to riding skateboard. He was magnificent skateboarder when we were young. Went back to it. Yeah, he was. Did you say was he?
Yeah, I did.
All right. All right, broke his coccyx because he comes straight down and you're not ready and you don't think, you know, just broke the knob off the end of your tail sort of thing.
Not the knob off the end of your tail. Okay,
let's not focus on that.
Okay, what do you want to talk about then? What, when glory days, reliving your glory days, when have you done something stupid to yourself that you shouldn't have because you're old?
Or a mate, or a husband, or even a wife or something. It must be ladies that go back to like netball or their own.
It's often when you're showing your kids how to do it. Give me that. I'll show you how to do this. I used to be bloody tremendous at this when I was a kid.
Have you injured yourself going back to your glory days?
Caleb from Caboolture. What happened when you tried to relive the glory days?
It wasn't me. It was my old man.
Oh, yes. What did he do, Caleb?
He wanted to play AFL again.
Nah, he
wasn't. He didn't even make it to the first game.
What
he was just
do?
A training. Didn't warm up properly. Tried to kick the ball too hard and ripped his quad.
Mm. Oh my God.
Season over.
First, how old was he? Yeah.
50.
Nah. There is a reason that AFL players retire at 32 and there's no 50-year-olds running around.
Caleb, did he have to go to the physio or any of that sort of stuff? Look, that's optimistic that I've got to get back for next week.
Oh, no, they pulled the pin after that, but it was still sore for a while.
They cheer him off, did they? Did they cheer him off the training field?
I was doing my own training. I just said, I told you so.
Yeah, told you so. Yeah, you get it. Sit in the car, Caleb. Old man. Thanks, Caleb.
Andrew of Deception Bay, what happened?
Mate, I was playing Masters Rugby for Redcliffe, and I was getting tackled, making a run. And in the same tackle, I dislocated my big toe and snapped my ACL.
And was this, how old were you, Andrew?
Mate, I'm 39.
Yep.
Were you showing off for anyone, like your son or anything like that?
Oh, it's just not showing off, just something to do.
Yeah, something to do. What made you think at the age of 39, you know what's for me? Rugby's for me. What made you think that, Andrew?
Well, I've been playing all my life.
Yeah.
And it's just a good thing to do on the weekends, you know. You have a game and then a beer with the boys.
Yeah, okay. You could probably just cut the game out. You can still have the beer, Andrew.
There weren't too many beers that night, I tell you.
No it was more morphine. Okay. Thank you, Andrew. Yes.
I'd love to hear from Bounce.
What's
just
the bounce?
How many, you know, bounce the trampoline, at Tingalpa, trampoline, the trampolining. Just how many mums and dads get on and go, no, let me show you how it's done.
Bang. On the collarbone. Andrew is from Tingalpa. Andrew, you've tried to relive your glory days?
Yeah, mate. Tried to play an old boys game for the old school. Lasted about 30 seconds on the field before I rotated my left knee and snapped my ACL.
Oh, my God. What game? What type of – what sport was it, Andrew?
It was soccer, mate.
Yeah. Soccer.
How much prep did you put into it, Andrew, knowing the old boys game was coming up? How much training had you done?
About 30 seconds on the Saturday morning before the game.
Yeah
that's the key. That's the key. The key is no preparation, and then I'll be right. That is the key.
Oh, mate, the most preparation I did for that whole game was actually strapping up my right knee, so I didn't jam my right knee. So
the other one, and then the other one went. Thank you, Andrew. That'll be Floyd Mayweather. In 10 years' time, we're going to be talking about Floyd Mayweather at 50, coming out to box like Joe Bugner. That's the conversation we're going to be having.
He would have run out of his $250 million. He'll need some more cash.
From Melbourne's mean streets.
You could say this was the murder we missed.
A story you'll have to hear to believe.
He said he was a 200-year-old vampire.
Why was Shane Chantra's Abbott gunned down before giving evidence?
Two men shot him down. It's a mystery within a mystery within a mystery.
Listen now to this untold true crime story from Adam Shand. The Trials of the Vampire at podcast1.com.au or download the app.
Wallabies.
Yeah, come on. I know. People say, you get to work on a Monday, everyone goes, how was your weekend? Well, I went over to Dunedin and watched very closely and commentated the Wallabies against the All Blacks, and we came within a bee's dick of beating the buggers.
So we were up 16-0. 17-0 we were up. And Foley had missed two kicks by then, and we were all over them. I was like, here we go. We finally found a way of...
Wasn't it magical?
Yeah.
Can
Israel
you tell me? Yeah. It's the first time I've ever watched a rugby game all
Welcome
the way
aboard,
through.
Welcome aboard, Rob.
Yeah, and I watched it because I knew how excited you were.
I know, and
I
said to you, they'll pay $15 and I'm going to have another go at them. And I didn't do it in the end, Robin, because I know how much it affects my commentary. I saw that text you sent after the game.
It's funny,
you
mate.
Said, I hope you got that money on. And I looked at it and went, oh, I'm glad I didn't put money on them, because that would have just destroyed me that last try for
well,
the All
Blacks. Here's the thing, right? That, as a complete novice watching rugby for the first time, the thing I loved the most in those first 10 minutes was how we were 17-0 up and it was just silence. Was it like that in the stadium?
Oh, God,
the New
yeah.
Zealanders couldn't believe it.
Now, if anyone knows anything about Kiwis, they're fairly cocky because it is their number one sport and they're the best in the world and they'll tell you that. But for years, Robin, they used to go for all 4 years between World Cups being the best, being the best, being the best, and then they choke at the World Cup. And all Kiwis, especially the ones living here in Australia, pull their heads in. But for the last two World Cups, they have been world champions now for 6-7 years. So they're cocky again. So you need that. They think they are the greatest at rugby.
So
and that's finally shut them up. But they got to 21-17 and just thought, oh, no. When the All Blacks go past you, 21-17, I thought, oh, this is going to be another one of those where no one's going to remember that the Wallabies were leading and going, well, it's just going to be a cakewalk and off we go home. But Jesus, what a fixture it was.
So that's soccer's a bit like this too, Marto.
In what way?
A bad game of soccer is unwatchable, and a great game of soccer is the best thing. Rugby's the same. A bad game of rugby is completely unwatchable, but a great game of rugby like that one on the weekend is so fantastic.
Everyone can understand it.
Is that about attitude of the players or the way the team's set up? Because it was such a good game to watch.
They are. You know what? We had a chance to beat them, but there were some wrong selections. There's still so much to improve in the Wallabies, but they circled the chuck wagons, and they just went, right, the world hates us. They got into a little bubble and said, the world hates us. Even our own fans hates us. We don't have any fans anymore. Let's do this. And attitude is everything. Quite simply, like I wrote something down when I was coming home yesterday. What is success? Like you think, what is success? Because we went close to it. I wrote this down. It's carrying on from failure, from one failure or disappointment to another without ever losing your enthusiasm and attitude. And the moment, that's the Wallabies.
Well, that's like Winston Churchill's quote.
Is it?
Success is. It is. You've accidentally invented a quote from Winston Churchill.
Well, I probably had it in my head. You get the quote.
Yeah.
That's what Wayne Bennett says all the time. If you do the same thing, it's not that one.
Well, he got it off Winston Churchill as well.
It's probably in a rugby league quote book. But they are. They showed they could have dogged it after last week, just gone, well, why are we bothering? And turned their toes up because he didn't pick the right team still. He's still got to get rid of people.
Okay.
And they showed the attitude to just keep tackling and teach. It was a wonderful example
to
everyone.
4 minutes to go, they were in the lead. I got up to go to bed. Like, I thought, we're done. We've done it. Excellent. Yay, Marto. I hope you put the money on it.
You went to bed before that last try.
Yeah, because I thought we've done it. We're all good. And Sean, my partner, said to me, oh, four minutes is a really long time in rugby.
Well, 30 seconds is. Oh, it was tragic. And then we didn't win at last.
Soft try, mate. Pretty soft try at the end, you'd have to say.
There's a lot of people say, I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Oh, don't you? Okay, great.
Till
next time.
Yeah, no.
Till next time that he does it. We've got to bag up how many times he says he doesn't want to do it.
Where's that thing I brought into here today? The only thing I did take out of the game.
Oh, yes.
Hold on. It's over here.
But he doesn't
want
to talk
about it again.
Yeah, I do want to talk about this.
Okay,
what I noticed, I brought back this for everyone. It's a plastic stubby. I don't mind people throwing. Look, Kiwis were throwing these at me while we were doing our post-match stuff. And I thought, I don't care. They're plastic stubbies. Why don't we have these at our sporting grounds?
That's a separate issue, but you're right. We'll put a picture of that on our Facebook page. It's like a soft drink bottle, but it's got
soft drink bottle with beer in it.
Yeah,
you don't have to have those silly beer attendants opening beer cans and throwing them into cups, which holds everyone up.
If that's what you took out of the Wallaby loss,
then
it is a very good day.
Everyone takes their own things out of a loss.
Test it out. Throw it at me.
Yeah, you watch.
Yeah, go on.
You ready?
Yep. Go.
Oh.
I'm not offended.
No, that's right.
I'm not offended.
Because
you know
it's not going to hurt.
That's fine.
But the ones that they throw at Marto are full of a warm yellow liquid that they've just...
Marto and Robin, new Triple M.
Themselves. Mayweather McGregor fight yesterday. It was the... What did you make of the fight? Do you think there was... I am claiming that there is still a little bit convenient. 10 rounds, that means that people didn't feel upset about it. McGregor didn't get knocked out, but Mayweather keeps his... perfect record. It all just felt a bit
convenient. So how do they do that, though? Do they pay off the ref?
No, the camps. The camps get together beforehand.
Scripted storyline.
Except, though, that the ref was the guy that called it off. So he must be in the mix, if you think.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think boxing judges and referees have got the.
But I'm looking at all the photos, Ed, and you saw some of the slow-mo replays after the fight. They were hitting each other fair dinkum.
Yeah, well, but these are two people who are used to being hit. That's true. They're not like
punch fit.
Punch fit, yes, they are. Yeah, well, listen to this. This was McGregor after. Oh, so his 10th round. The ref stopped it, and this is what he had to say for himself.
Did you get tired?
That's exactly what it is. It's fatigue. That's why I thought the ref could have just let it keep going. Let me go down. Let the man put me down. Like wobbly and fatigue, that's energy. That's not damage. I'm clear headed.
And afterwards, they're, like before the fight, it's all, you know, I hate him. It's this, it's that. And then afterwards, it's hugs. It's press conferences, plugging their new businesses. It's all just so convenient.
You're very sus on it.
Oh, so
convenient. I hadn't even thought about that until I came in this morning. I thought, wow, they belted each other and that was a great thing.
No, the Horn-Pacquiao fight, that was a legit. You look at Horn-Pacquiao.
Legit?
That was legit as legit gets. And then you watch this and you're like, just feels, looked a bit like a dance to me.
Do you know the problem I had with it after watching the Horn-Pacquiao fight, which, as you know, was my first ever boxing fight to watch. And then I watched the one yesterday. Mayweather did not have a single scratch or bruise on his face. He was like he just walked out of, you know, having dinner with his relatives.
He might have a couple of lumps on the back of his head because, my geez, he got hit there a few times.
But look at Horn's eye. Like even last night when I saw him on the Sunday Project, he still has scarring from where he got bashed so badly by Pacquiao. And then Mayweather's just walking around. He's not even
But Mayweather's 40, and I don't think he's ever been hit really hard in his whole life. That's...
Greg's from the Gold Coast. Greg, what did you think, mate?
Oh, look, I might be wrong, but I really think that Mayweather could have knocked him out in the second round or whenever. I think it was, you know, entertainment, and everyone went to the venues. It was great. You know, I've never seen places so busy.
Well,
but,
Greggy, where were you? Which pub?
Cromanarachel. Right, it was busier than an Anzac Day.
Right, think about the money. Okay. Now, here's your skepticism, Ed. 18 grand, I heard that all pubs and taverns and clubs had to pay to get, you know, pay main event. So $18,000 worth of beer and food they had to sell. Greg, they would have covered that easily at the Cromanarachel?
Probably in the first 30 minutes, I reckon.
Yep.
Phil's from Stafford. Phil, what did you think of the fight, mate?
Yeah, it was actually, I thought it was a really good fight, to be honest. I don't think there was... I don't think there's much weight to saying that it was a little bit fixed, because if you go over the fight and you watch it again, you'll see that in the sixth round, Conor was rocked pretty badly, and then again in the seventh, I think he took about five hits, clean shots to the face, where, I mean, if it had been another 10 seconds or 15 seconds to the round, he probably would have been knocked out then.
Ah, right, the bell saved him.
But... Yeah, the other thing is, even when he got to the 10th, and Conor was saying that he was just tired. I mean, there's no way to know either, because if you look at the fight, you'll see the ref actually step back and put his hands out to give him saying that he's given Conor a chance to defend himself.
Sure.
And he still doesn't defend himself the second time Mayweather goes over him. So he's got to stop it because it's just it's a junior.
Hands were down, but Phil, here's my theory, right? So it's 10th round, which
Phil
means...
Phil knows he's boxing, mate, so be careful.
Yeah, but I know my events.
Yes.
So Phil, and I know my TV spectacles.
Yes.
So half an hour, Phil, that's what they got because they got the 10 rounds. They got the 10 rounds, 3 minutes. McGregor wins the first two rounds. That gives everyone hope. Oh, hang on. Now they're up and about. Mayweather wanders off into the sun with his record intact, and he also is now the biggest boxing promoter in the world, which is what he wanted, bigger than Oscar De La Hoya and bigger than HBO. Phil?
So I pay my $125,000 and I'm happy with the length of that fight. That looked fair dinkum enough for me not to complain.
That's right. Remember boxing had that few years where all the fights were going too short and it was all getting really dodgy, Phil?
Yeah. Look, I can agree with what you're saying, but I will say this. I think that Mayweather played a big part in stretching that fight out.
Okay, that's good. Thanks, Phil.
Not so much Conor.
No, fair. That's fair. Phil.
Thanks, mate. Phil, just one quick one. I see Crash Craddock in the Cremar today described Mayweather as Glenn McGrath, just line and length, mate. Would you think that's a good analogy?
Line and length, okay, yeah. Look, he...
Nagging.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got terrible...
a fairly good analogy, but... He was brilliant, mate. For a 40-year-old, you've got to give it to him. He hasn't fought in 2 years.
That's true. He spent all week at a strip club as well. So that was very impressive. Thank you, Phil.
Adam, you're from Browns Plains. You know your fight game?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm not much of a boxer. I've got a few friends who have boxed or you know do follow the sport, and you know, they explained it to me fairly well. Like,
what did you think of it?
For a Mayweather fight, like this is pretty much what you should have expected. Like, he's a very technical fighter. He lets first few rounds he keeps his distance. He lets them wear themselves out, and then as we saw, like four or five rounds in, McGregor was not handling it well, like, because he's used to the UFC. He's used to five rounds at the most.
Yeah. At the most, okay.
Whereas beyond that, this is uncharted territory for him. But I suppose you also noticed that in the first couple of rounds, Mayweather was deliberately ducking his head to try to get hit in the back of the head, because I'm pretty sure that's an instant disqualification.
He's turning his back.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's playing to the rules, because I was actually talking with a friend last night who does box, and he was saying that's actually a legitimate tactic. In the first couple of rounds, if you try to duck your head, so they do come over the top and hit you in the back of the head, which is they get disqualified at that point. Well, generally, after the first round or two, if that's not working, you wave off and you try something again. But obviously, with the because that is the way McGregor fights. He's used to just hitting at all angles, front of the face, back of the head.
Yeah, that's right. He can do it.
Mayweather was using that to his advantage.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. Thanks, Adam.
Tactic.
Okay, Greg of Brackenridge, what do you reckon?
Guys, I just think it was more of an event than a fight, to be perfectly honest. I think Floyd let him have those first early rounds, just to see if he did have anything in his hands to trouble him. And once sort of Floyd worked out that he didn't have much, I think Floyd could have put him away whenever he wanted to, really, to be honest.
Kept him standing. Hey, Greg, I agree with you. I think as an event, it was fantastic. And that's all that probably matters. They've managed to get over a year out of this, if you count all of the stuff on late night talk shows, all of the stuff on Twitter. They did a press conference too, Amato. They've absolutely got their money's worth out of it.
You know what? I'm kind of thinking, boxing's back in Australia. You take the Horn Pacquiao, then you hate that one. It was huge yesterday afternoon around Australia. Every pub had it on and paid their money, and everyone got out and about. It's now time for Green Mundane kill boxing again.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I'll be working on it.
Those two would have spoken to each other last night, going, we're back on. We're on again.
We're on again.
Now on Triple M, we're checking in with Gordy Tallis. Tell us. Everyone loves Tell Us. Here's the bloke who's watched every game of footy on the weekend. And yesterday afternoon, hey, Gordy, you all right? I heard you had the flu.
Yeah, mate, just... Yeah, it wasn't feeling the best, actually, so I'm slowly getting over it, Marto.
I wish we could reach through and give you a hug, big fella. Hey, mate. Hey, we do have a Penrith fan here in Brendo. Yesterday's Dragons. Jeez, did you see that coming without Dugan?
No, look, well, that was a strong message that Paul McGregor sent. The bus arrives, and there was no Dugan, and no one knew, actually. No one knew until the team sheet was signed 1 hour before, so I think he raced the bus there. But
what are the rumours?
He just missed the bus. And then Lara Pitt, obviously, is a tragic Dragons fan, and then she's, I think, tweeted last night that it's not the first time that he's missed the bus, and obviously there's that State of Origin situation where him and Dugan went down to, left Kingscliff and went a couple hundred Ks down and had a beer. So,
hey, Gordy, are there some guys, because he's had, things in the past as well, are there some players you just can't teach? They're just going to be like that, and that's just who they are, and you either accept it and sort of pretend that
James
they're going
to... James O'Connor in rugby, Ed.
What do you do with
them, Gordy? You're talking to one now. And I think I'm talking to three in there. But, No, but you know what? Sometimes people are just like, people
late
can just
people.
Be late. And I think it's their personality. And it doesn't mean that they don't care. Like, and you get people.
Yes, it does. Gordy. I got to cut in. Yes, it does. I am never late. And I have got a thing about it. I reckon people that are late in life are disrespecting you by thinking that your time doesn't matter. It drives me crazy.
And it drives me crazy too, right? Because I'm a bit like you. So I was
You're punctual, Gord. You're always on time.
Mate, I was late once in my whole career, and that was at training, and it moved from 2:30 to 2. Shane Webke was there like an hour before.
Webke.
So there's some people there.
Yeah, but what you do, you do make people late because they start talking to you, and 3 or 4 hours later, well, Gord, I've got to go. I've got another appointment.
You love exactly. a chat, don't you, Gordy?
Yeah, so, you know what, mate, that was a real, look, that was a real tough decision made by Paul McGregor yesterday, and, you know, he's not one of those coaches like Wayne Bennett that can make them, but he did. Their season was on the line. If they lose yesterday, they're out. There's no finals for the Dragons.
True.
So I reckon it was a really tough decision. And, and when it's about culture, it's good to see the coaches trying to get back a... I mean, because the players have been running the game for the last 10 years.
Yeah, that's interesting. Hey, Gord, just a quick one on the Melbourne Storm. I mean, they absolutely thrashed the pants off South. So, I mean, how is it the Melbourne Storm seem to get better as the year goes on? Injuries don't seem to hurt them as much. They don't seem to get fatigued. What is going on?
Best coach, all accountable. They have a real honesty session. Anybody can say anything in any video. No one's allowed to drop the lid. It's an amazing organisation. Craig Bellamy has done something special, and you know, you've got to tie in the senior players as well. But and I'm alarmed that Cameron Smith still said, "Oh, you know, we still haven't had an 80-minute performance yet this year."
I know. Give what it a rest,
want?
Cam.
What does he want? Yeah. Mate, I think they're showing off, Cameron.
No one misses the bus at the Storm, do they?
I don't think so.
No one misses the bus. And sometimes you get a boat that you can't account for, but that's about it.
Underneath Inglis's house, that's right.
Just in case you got to get down to Yarra real quick.
Just in case you got to get down there. Okay, good. That's your lemon, obviously, Josh Dugan. Just a quick legend before we let you wander off.
Oh, legend, I suppose. Let's go with Parramatta. The score 50 points. This is a side last year that had so many dramas off the field. You know, they come up to Suncorp, and I didn't think that they could have matched it with the Broncos. So I think that was the best performance of the weekend. It was it was brilliant against a high-quality football side.
Okay, good.
It starts again in Thursday night, Broncos-Cowboys. How good?
Broncos-Cowboys Thursday night. So, and the Cowboys, what a performance they had, actually. To go down there and beat the Tigers right out of Campbelltown. So now they've cemented a spot in the final, so it's all starting to take shape except for the 8th spot.
So you don't like Daly Cherry Evans, do you?
Why is that?
Well, you didn't mention him. He scored 2 field goals in the last 3 minutes.
Greg Alexander said it's the best field goal that he's ever seen.
And
it's
left foot.
No, you both see that. Well, see, he already got a wrap off like a halfback. See, I've got to wrap the forwards, Marto.
Oh, okay.
But you know what it's like.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like, mate, Tamalolo, Bourne, someone like that. Someone big and ugly I've got to talk about.
Okay, Gordy, you go and rest up. Lemon, garlic, ginger, that's what we've heard works. Get rid of that flu. We'll speak to you soon.
Hi, I'm Mark Boris. Every single day in Australia, people are busting their guts and starting and running their own businesses. It's a big deal. 60% of Australians are hired by small to medium-sized business owners. These guys are doing their bit, buying stock, hiring people, and paying their taxes. So what is it like to start your own business? How do you go from just running a business on the side after work to owning something much bigger? How do you make it your future? Join me on The Mentor, a weekly show on Podcast One where I speak to Aussie business owners who are working through just that. I find out what makes them tick. I help them work out their next steps for their growth and for their future.
The Mentor with Mark Burris. Listen now at podcastone.com.au or download the Podcast One app.
Incredible images. We've all seen it. Donald Trump doesn't need the glasses to stare at it. There was a solar eclipse that went over the top of the northern hemisphere through America. And Robin, you had a science question about that. And we said, we don't know. We're rugby league and television. That's us. What we need is our proper science guy. So we go to the doctor. Dr. Carl, his latest book is The Doctor, and he's on the line to answer your eclipse question. Robin, good morning, Dr. Carl.
Good morning, Dr. Marto, Dr. Ed, and Dr. Robin. Hello.
Hello. Now, Dr. Carl, I just know in the last week or two, some weird stuff has been going on emotionally for a lot of people. And I know that sounds a bit out there, but a number of people on social media particularly have been saying it's got to do with the eclipse. So I just wanted to ask you, as a scientist, does something like that massive eclipse impact people emotionally?
We have no proof for it. The plural of story is stories, not data, not research. So we have a story. And what about all the people who says, hey, you'll never guess what happened. There's an eclipse this week, and guess what? nothing happened in my life. I just want everybody to know that nothing different happened in my life.
Right.
Everybody. That doesn't get out there.
But it does impact things like tides and, you know.
But the eclipse doesn't, does it?
No, but the moon does.
The moon doesn't cause changes in behaviour. If you do the big studies where you look at, for example, 700,000 admissions to hospitals over a 10-year period, or hundreds of thousands of calls to police departments or psychiatric wards, and you look at it over a 5 and 10 and 15-year period, you find nothing. But you want to look at it tonight, oh, sure, I stub a toe tonight, and, oh, look, it's obviously the full moon or the eclipse, but you average it out over 10 years, that you don't see any bumps on full moons or eclipses. I'm sorry. You do get wind happening more during an eclipse because the air cools down suddenly. Oh, and then, okay. You know, you get that sort of thing happening. Yeah, that's about it.
Dr. Carl, can I give you some odd data? My sister owned a funeral parlour for 32 years, all right? She kept records, and they did the correlation with temperature and also poor weather compared to number of deaths on that day. It would appear that on a really cold day or a miserably rainy day, people just give up.
You do have more stress on the body when it's colder. And if you've got somebody who's right near death, and they just need that little extra bit to sort of take them to the other side, then harsh conditions can make them die sooner and nice, comfortable conditions can keep them alive a little bit longer. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Okay, but from the way that you're talking, science doesn't ever seem to take into account emotions. It seems like they're two entirely different things.
You got a good point there. So what science can deal with is what it can measure. And so you can measure the speed of a car. You can measure the height of a wall. But then if you're trying to measure happiness, then how do you do that? You can't sort of wave a meter over somebody. So you then have to ask people. And the psychologists do their best in that field. But you're dead right. It is a difficult thing to measure. But you're right.
Well, our own doctor is Dr. Carl. His latest book is The Doctor. It's talking all things science. Speak to you soon, Dr. Carl.
Thank you, Dr. Robin, Dr. Marlo, Dr. Ed.
Thanks to Outrigger Resorts, Hawaii Tourism and Jetstar. Make Hawaii your next holiday with all-day, everyday low fares at jetstar.com.
We're packing the bag for a Hawaiian holiday. Want to come? It's Marlo, Ed and Robin's Romantic Redemption.
Yes, it is. If you in life are romantically challenged and you want to dob yourself in, or perhaps you are dealing with someone in your life that is romantically challenged, you go to triplem.com.au. You tell us your best or worst story about how poor the romance has been. And let us take you, fly you on a wing and a prayer with the aloha spirit to go to one of the most romantic places in the world, Hawaii, to make it all better. What a wonderful idea.
Listen, now I just want to help because I know we got heaps of these to give away to our listeners to come to Hawaii, but don't go general and go, I forgot my wife's birthday 22 years in a row. Like that.
No.
Go specific. Go it's that you. Really special night where you really let her down.
And know that no matter what you say, Marto will be able to equal that sentiment. Yeah. He understands. He's equally as bad.
We're not here to judge. We're here to redeem, and that's what it's about. Right. And you'll just be taken away by the beauty of Hawaii, by the spirit of it. So you've got a chance at redemption here. Triple M, people are calling. No, it's not a calling thing.
Don't call.
I remember the night.
Yeah. I've let my wife down eat.
Register at triplem.com.au and just think that the ultimate redemption is the fact that you take your lovely partner to Hawaii.
That's right. And I'll counsel you. I'll sit you in a hammock as the sun goes down there in Honolulu and I'll peel some grapes and say, you're an idiot, mate.
I'll shop with your partner.
That's what you want. What brought you to the brink? Triplem.com.au. Yeah. Get your stories in. Ooh. It's all thanks to Outrigger Resorts, Hawaii Tourism and Jetstar. Make Hawaii your next holiday with all-day, everyday low fares. Jetstar.com. You're on the TV tonight, Cavally.
Got to jump out. Yep, haven't been paying attention on After Survivor tonight. Yeah. Myself, young Amanda Keller's on. Dilruk, very funny
guys.
Not
all that young.
Sam and Celia.
Yes, she is.
Bacuola. And we've been... Get him out.
It's after 9 o'clock.
It doesn't matter.
That's like sending a bloke off.
That's not constraints.
Oh, there's a goal kick with 10 seconds down. You send me off. Waste of time.
We're after Survivor. We've got Jen from The Bachelor, who was the evil one in The Bachelor Mansion. So she's on for...
She walked out because she was slightly inebriated and got upset.
Is she the worst?
She's the worst. Yeah, she's the worst. But she's on. She's good fun. Anyway, after Survivor, Channel 10. Get involved. Good.
Anyone who's been listening to this show for a while realise our number one bugbear in terms of road safety is text messaging in the car. And thank goodness, in Road Safety Week for Queensland, they finally got a little campaign to get your chin up and put the phone down. Love it?
Yeah, well, I did lots of driving in the last couple of days, and every single electronic sign on every freeway from the Gold Coast to Ipswich says, phone down.
Oh, they're talking about it.
Yep,
thank God. Well, here's a bloke who knows all about it. Russell White from Driver Safety Australia. Hi, Russ.
Yeah, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Yeah, we're good, Russ. Now, you've just attended the federal government's National Road Safety Forum in Canberra. What is the number one issue made in cars?
Oh, Ed, I don't think there's any doubt, to my mind anyway, that distraction is the big one that we're dealing with right now, and I think the one that we'll be dealing with for quite some time. You know, I think... we've made a lot of inroads in terms of things like drink driving and fatigue and seatbelt wearing, that sort of stuff. But to me, distraction is the big one that we're going to have to try and sort out in the not too distant future.
It's really interesting to me. I have a son that is going for his licence this week. He's 17. And under no circumstances would he ever consider drink driving. But when I ask him about his phone, he's a little more vague about what that all means.
And I don't think you're alone there, Robin. I think, you know, and I would agree with you. I think from certainly the high school students that we talk to, and even the primary school students, the kids are really pretty switched on in terms of things like alcohol and understanding that's a socially unacceptable thing to do. I think the problem that we've got now with smartphones is that we have become so addicted to their daily, almost their minute-by-minute use, that it's hard for people to disassociate that time from driving time to being on the phone time. And that's where I think the next thing we've got to try and do is from this campaign, is try and educate young people about those risks.
Russ, I grew up in the 80s. There was no random breath testing. They finally brought that in, and it's made sure no one drinks or not many people drink anymore. Why can't we do random phone testing? They pull up cars at any stage and they check whether you've sent or received a text in the last half or 10 minutes, half an hour, what is. Why can't they do that?
Yeah, it's a good question, Marto, isn't it? I think, and again, at this forum, we were talking about, you know, what sort of things could we do from an enforcement a detection standpoint. And one of the things I've always said, I think, is that technology's got us into this problem. So I think there's a role that technology could have in alleviating it. So I think, definitely you could do random sort of checks like that. But I also think there's technology that exists right now that can actually prevent signals from entering a motor vehicle. And I think for us, I think it's whilst we need enforcement too, I think we also need to try and promote the uptake of technology like that too.
Talking to Russell White, Driver Safe Australia, driversafety.com.au, about the distraction that phones cause, particularly with young drivers, Robin.
Well, the thing I'm interested in, and those initiatives are potentially coming in the future, but as someone who works in driver safety, for all of those young drivers listening and all of us parents who worry about them, what's the one thing that you would say to them now?
Simple thing is, if the engine's on, the telephone's got to be off. And the reason is that it's so important is that the distraction level that mobile phones can have, it can vary from anything from a couple of seconds in reaction time up to 20 to 25 seconds in reaction time. And so if you're travelling down the road at any sort of speed, that sort of delay in reaction time is a huge crash risk. And one of the things that's interesting, Robin, is when we've looked at research that's been done, one of the unis in the United States has actually been able to do some brain mapping of brain activity when people are actually just driving normally, and you see the brain's lit up quite well. The moment that they pick up a phone, or they actually even use a hands-free mobile phone, that level of brain activity reduces by about 80%. And that's simply because when you're on a phone, it takes you from being broad and externally focused to being narrow and internally focused. So my number one tip is engine on, phone off.
Hey, Russell White from Driver Safety Australia, driversafety.com.au. Good to speak to you, mate. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Drive safe.
Okay, so here's my question, Marto, because you've got two kids who have now got their license, and I have got one who is hell-bent on hurtling towards it. Did you have a system where you said, okay, my phone's away? Like, we all know it, but unless we as the people that are teaching our kids, unless we do something physical, like that's my thought. Like I'm now, I said to my eldest Finn, I said, as soon as you get your license, phone goes back into the boot, as does yours. But I'm just wondering,
do you put your phone in the boot every time you drive?
I have started to because it's too big a temptation for me. I used to be the person at the traffic lights, you know, and that's so not okay.
You already guess how much I hate texting, so I do not touch my phone.
I know. I'm curious because all the experts say it. We all know it. It goes, you know, yep. I think a lot of parents do it. And I guess as our kids come to driving age and as you say, Marto, they get their freedom and they go off, unless it's kind of ingrained in their absolute essence, then they'll just do it. So we wanted some tips.
I like yours, though. You're saying don't lead your parents. My kids have never seen me sending a text or receiving a text or any of that stuff or on a phone in the car. But if there's a lot of parents who do it, and that's the example the kids are getting.
Yep. Mick of Brackenridge, what'd you do?
Yeah, morning. Because I've been a truck driver for 25 years, my kids are actually better behaved than I am. They always have their earphones ready. They got the little button they push to talk hands-free. They often will talk on the phone when they're driving, but they do it hands-free.
On their headphones?
Yeah, on the headphones. See, I think I've eaten more meals in the truck than I have at home.
That's interesting. Eating, that's one of the things.
Yeah, eating, drinking, talking on the phone. It's all a distraction.
Hey.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, Mick, I was just saying to these guys while the song was on, and we used to use Refidex. I used to have a Refidex looking for places in the old days on the steering wheel. Do you remember those, Doug?
Yeah, yeah. Steer with your knees and read a book.
Steer with your knees. Wow. There you go. Thank you, Mick. It's interesting.
The way it was. Hello, who's this?
This is Daryl from Waco. Hey, Daz, what are you telling your kids about driving and using their phones?
Well, not to do it because, you know, even this hands-free stuff, you know, you push a button and it's still taking concentration off the road.
How do you get through to them though? Like, how do you try and get through to them? Like, you know what kids are like, oh, you're dead, I know what, you know what I mean? That type of deal. How do you get through that?
Yeah, well, you know, just gotta reinforce that, you know, picking your phone up, you're looking down, and 2 seconds later, you run up the back of a car, you know, you kill somebody.
No,
you know, to take their phone off them is probably the only way to do it. I know it's a harsh reality of, you know, taking something off, they've learned to use now, you know, or the technology now that they need their phone. Like my son texts us all the time, you know, and whether you can, you know, look down or whatever, but you know, it's just hard.
Daryl, what do you think of my idea? We do random breath testing. That wasn't around 30 years ago. Random text testing. They pull you over, check your phone, whether you've received or sent a text in the last 20 minutes or 15 minutes or something. Take your phone off you for a week. Second time, they take your car off you.
Ooh.
Yeah, that sounds great. It's a deterrent, isn't it?
Yeah,
it
definitely is.
It's a deterrent.
Because the message ain't getting through at this stage.
And have you seen Marto on the big electronic signs wherever you're driving, the chin up?
Like, oh, I love that one. That was only started in the last few weeks.
Yeah,
kids started that apparently, telling their other mates, get your chin up, your chin down for 2 seconds, and then you can travel 80 metres and stuff.
Thank you, Daryl. David, what
would
you like to say? Good.
My kid, he got caught a couple of months back, and by the cops, he was texting while he's driving. And when he got home, I just ended up smashing the phone.
Wow.
And I just told him, you do it again, then it'll happen again.
Whoa. Oh, wow. And phones are worth 700 or 800, aren't they?
Yeah, but you know, they've got to learn the lesson somehow.
What happened? Did he buy another one?
Yeah, and I bought the first one, but I told him it's time for you to buy one now because he's 18.
Yeah. And what's been the result, Dave?
Yeah, well, he said he hasn't done it no more because, you know, he's the one who has to buy it. And if he gets caught again, I don't care if he bought it or not. I'll just get rid of it again.
What was the fine from the cops? How much did they fine you for texting?
Well, I think it was almost $300 or so.
Pretty
strong message. Your message was stronger than his, than the cops one, I think, Dave.
Yeah, and I think, you know, maybe the cops should do that too if they find people on their phone.
Oh, my God.
They should in their phone.
They should, that's what they should do when they see Marto with his Refidex. Grab it. Smash it in front of him.
Smash it. Burn it. Rip it in half.
Some good methods there on 13353. Thanks for that.
Marto, Ed and Robin for breakfast. Doing it for Team Marto. They have your Father's Day shopping sorted.